Rob Lee. Midfielder, Newcastle Hall of Famer and hogger of first names. 380-odd appearances for the Magpies. Also played for Charlton, Derby, West Ham and Wickham. 21 caps for England. Served as a Confederate general during the American Civil. Nope, that's the wrong one. Plus, author. And today we're reading his book, Come In, number 37. So let's see what the book club and special guest Johnny Sharples thought of it on today's Football Book Club.
It's a bit like How I Met Your Mother.
Yes!
He said that Duncan Ferguson was trying to find a llama for Nobby Solano. And he was like searching around Newcastle for it for like days.
See, there you go. Rob Lee invented Secret Santa.
Although there was one bit where he said, I tried a cigarette, but I didn't like it. And I was like, that's a good Katy Perry song.
The most explosive revelation that comes out of this book is that Stuart Pearce has still kept his hand in doing some electrician work for Warren Barton.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Life of Pi, more Barry Fry. Okay. It's always better when you react with noise as opposed to just all grimacing.
No, I know. I felt like my reaction there was so visceral that you could probably hear my face crease.
Yeah, we did a bit, I think. We'll slow it down. We'll slow it down and see what we hear. So you weren't happy with that? I thought it was a good one by Matthew J. Swindle.
No, he's done better.
Do it again. Okay. What was it? Who was the author?
Were you not listening?
I just forgotten already.
Less Life of Pi, more of Barry Pi, Fry.
Crucially, yeah. It's a book title.
Yeah, it's a good one.
No,
it's different.
Don't stand up for him.
We're moving on. I'm James Berg, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Les Ferdinand's Sir Les and Alan Shearer's My Story So Far, the complete audio cassettes. But today, I don't know how many there are. I tried to find it on Amazon, but I don't know how long that is. I bet it's long. But today we're reading Rob Lee's 2001 book, Come In, number 37. And joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
James Balgin.
Hello.
And welcome to the show, internet funny man and Newcastle United supporter, it's the brilliant Johnny Sharples.
Oh. Thank you very much. That's not the worst intro I've ever been given. I've been called a journalist, which isn't very nice. I've been introduced as a Manchester United fan, which is arguably worse before now. And as a former Manchester United midfielder, Five Live once billed me as, which put the pressure on. There's a guy that was in Manchester United's youth team who coincidentally is from the village that I've just moved to called John Sharples, and the researcher just did very rudimentary rudimentary research and decided that he's about 40 something and
did it make you question your social media output?
Yeah, and I don't think I particularly look my age, but I'm not in my 40s to begin with.
Well, it was that or King of the Football Zings is what I wrote down before. Ooh. Do you prefer that? King of the Football Zings?
Just call it journalist, Manchester United fan.
Welcome, journalist, Man United fan, Johnny Sharples. Big reader of football books, Johnny?
Not a big reader of books in general. So before I read this one, the last two books I read were both about the history of pop punk, which gives you an idea of my literary output. I'd rather read about Green Day than Watford goalkeeper Chris Day.
Thank you very much. Matthew J. Swindle would have been proud of that one.
He's sitting at home going, oh, darn.
So when I was looking for this, I think I originally said that I owned this book. When I was looking for it, I came across Sol Campbell's autobiography, which I haven't read, and Shay Given's autobiography, which I haven't read. I didn't come across Come In number 37, so I've had to buy a second copy of it, and so I possibly now own two copies of Rob Lee's autobiography.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person in the world who can say that. When you bought it, were you a big fan of his in the first place, or was it a gift to you or something like that?
So I think I only bought it about 5 years ago, and probably about the same time I bought Sol Campbell and Shay Given's autobiography. Just making my own Newcastle five-a-side, former Newcastle five-a-side team out of autobiographies.
I forgot Campbell even played for Newcastle. Wow.
I think he does most of the time, to be honest with you. And it's probably best for all of us that we all wipe that from our memories. I should caveat before we actually get into this book that I love Robert Lee before I read this. He's one of my favourite Newcastle players. When I was young, I had a Newcastle shirt with his name and number on the back, possibly because it was paper letter and my parents refused to splash out to Shearer. But that's that's by the by. We stuck with Lee and number seven. So, yes, I absolutely adore Robert Lee. I think any Newcastle fan, as he stresses continuously throughout this book, as any Newcastle fan would attest, he is a fan favourite. It's usually up to the fans to declare that, not usually up to the player. But, yes, I adore Robert Lee. Very, very, very lovely footballer.
It's good to know that going into it, because we're going to see how that develops over the episode, I guess, whether you're still fan favourite Robert Lee by the end, or if he's waste of two books, Robert Lee. So we'll see which one it is. Also, you sent me a picture of the book absolutely littered with post-its saying you put more work into this than your degree. So but thanks.
I think that says more about how I treated my degree than how I have treated this. And to be honest, I'll probably get more use. I'm already, just by doing this podcast, getting more use out of this book than I have my degree. So there we go.
Terrific. What was your degree?
Criminology and sociology. So again, making jokes on Twitter doesn't really contribute to the works of Michel Foucault. So there we go.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's see what Johnny and the rest of the book club thought of Rob Lee's Coming, number 37. So, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, a quiz, and Ken Zong is back with another chant. But first, let's see what Amazon's saying. So, the book has 4.5 stars. Good. From 3 reviews. Bad. Not many. Including this 4-star review from Mr. J. Morris. Very informal.
That's Jody Morris.
Jody Morris. I was wondering the same thing, yeah. Entitled, the review is entitled 4 Stars, and it reads, good. So, Johnny, do you agree with Mr. Jody Morris? Good?
No.
You call him Mr. J. Morris a liar?
Who I really wanted to hear a review from was Mr. R. Hullett.
Who
is... The whole point of this book is the fact that it's basically a slam on Rudy Hullett. There is not a page that goes by where it isn't just like this person was quite, you know, this was a bad situation to be in, but not as bad as when Ruud Gullit was Newcastle manager. All the way through.
Very true.
I received bad service at this restaurant, but not as bad as the service I received from former Newcastle manager Ruud Gullit.
He's obsessed with them. He is obsessed with them. And there's many, as I think we'll mention at some point, there's a lot of things he repeats over and over and over again. But that is one thing in particular in there. Everyone else, what did you think of it? James, Jack, favourite book so far?
Oh, definitely not.
Okay.
He could have just called it, the lowest point of my career was when Ruud Gullit didn't give me a squad number for the start of the 99-2000 season, because the amount of times that sentence crops up.
That is kind of the hypothesis of the book, right? So the book, the title, Coming number 37, is all because he didn't have a... Ruud Gullit took away a squad number, and then he got the number 37 when Bobby Robson brought him out of the shadows, basically, at Newcastle, right?
But you don't find that out until the very end. Yeah.
That's true. And it's the one of the few books where, at the very end, they give you the title of the book, which is always a great reveal. But yeah, Jack, similar feelings to James?
Yeah, it's just one of the ones that makes you question why you do this, really.
This is exactly why we do this.
Johnny's Rob Lee's biggest fan. Come on, guys. Let's bring up a little bit. You've got to bring up a little bit.
I think Johnny's Rob Lee's biggest fan because of the economy of letters. I'm going to be honest.
Okay, sure. A default fan.
Default fan based on the fact that he's, probably the shortest, like six letters in the whole name. Shortest name book we've written.
That's very true. That is very true. I feel bad for saying it as well. I think it is... and Rob Lee seems a lovely guy. It's probably, it's just a bit of a dull book, isn't it? Johnny, is that fair to say?
I don't know how it is for Explosive Revelations, because as we've established, I haven't read Sol Campbell's book or Shea Given's book. But the most explosive revelation that comes out of this book is that Stuart Pearce has still kept his hand in doing some electrician work for...
Yeah, that's true.
For Warren Barton, I think. And the other explosive revelation is the fact that you had to be 16 to work the turnstile at Charlton Athletic, but Rob Lee was only 15.
That's it's very true.
Doesn't he say like, I guess I can say this now? And you're like, yes, Rob, you can definitely say this now.
The
you're
statute
fine.
Of limitations on turnstile work on a Saturday.
There's
in
a detective
the 80s.
There being like, finally, we've got him. I knew it'd slip on at some point, Rob Lee.
Finally moving that red string from one pin to the other, and it's at the end of Usual Suspects as Rob Lee walks away.
Drops the Charlton Athletic mug to the floor, it shatters.
Yeah, I mean, talking to Stuart Pearce, actually, when you mentioned him, that's one of the things that you say, Rude Hullet comes up a lot. The fact that Stuart Pearce likes the Sex Pistols, that might be the thing that is said more than anything else in the book, apart from Alan Shearer's not boring. The
Alan
idea
Shearer's Alan not boring.
Say what you want about Alan Shearer, but he's not boring. I've got the same anecdote 17 times to tell you why he's
and
not
also,
boring.
And also, Alan Shearer could have signed for any club in 1996. Any club in the world Alan Shearer could have signed for, but do you know who he signed for? Newcastle.
That's true. That is true.
That must come up about 50 times.
As a Newcastle fan, Johnny, are we missing something in it, would you say? Us non-Newcastle fans?
No, because it doesn't really tell you anything. So I don't know how much you knew about Robert Lee before you read the book, but there's probably about four things that I would say he is known for.
Okay.
The first being that he fell out with Rude Hullet, which comes up a lot in the book. The second is that he essentially took Gazza's place in the France 98 squad, which again comes up in the book. The other thing is that he allegedly joined Newcastle because he thought it was closer to London than Middlesbrough, which comes up in the book. Yep. And the final thing that people seem to know about Robert Lee is that once he was through on goal against Manchester United, running as hard as he can, and I'll be honest, when I say he's running as hard as he can, I think it's as slow as you can move without being stationary. and he was taken out completely by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who put the challenge in and then just started walking off the pitch before the referee even got to them. Which doesn't come up in the book, because I think it might have happened after the book was published. He missed out on a golden anecdote there. Think of how many exclamation marks he would have put in that story. when the most interesting thing about him is he didn't get a squad number and he's not very good at geography. It doesn't make for the most interesting book. So, and I don't know who the target audience for this book really was.
I guess it's you, right? Newcastle superfans.
Just you.
Internet funny men and former Man United reserve
king of the zingers.
Midfielders. And king of the football zings. King of the football zings. Johnny Shaw. I guess, right? It's for anyone who loves Newcastle so much, they don't really mind if there's no plot or stories. Right, I'm not saying that you dislike stories, but I mean, a general Newcastle fan might go in and go, oh, Rob Lee, I liked him, I bought it. But even then, I still would think you'd find it unsatisfying.
Yeah, and even the bit about Rude Hullet isn't as... To say it's what the book's essentially building up to, even the bit about Rude Hullet isn't that interesting. It's just that he didn't give me a number and he said I was too old and then he got sacked. I could read that on Wikipedia.
That's genuinely, that bit is so upsetting, because I spend the whole, like, because this book is 240 pages long and the first 220 pages he's going, oh, but let me tell you, I had it out with Rude Hullet. I'm going to get to that Rude Hullet story. And then you get there and he's like, you're too old, go play in the reserves. And he goes, okay, and that's it. And
It's a bit like How I Met Your Mother.
Yes. Yes, it is a bit like How I Met Your Mother.
It all builds up to this big story, like 8 seasons or whatever it was of How I Met Your Mother. And then at the end, it's just like, yeah, she died. spoilers for How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, wow.
Also,
I've never seen it.
Also,
okay,
in my head canon, she didn't die. That's, you know, because that was a terrible ending.
Okay. Your book was 240 pages long. Mine's 310 or something like that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Did you have the fully revised and updated for 2001, 2002?
I did, which is one of the least necessary revisions I've ever read in my life. It's at the end of the book, I'm guessing for you, Jack, is like, we're looking forward to seeing where we go under Bobby Robson. And then the next season, Cole Court gets injured and the season's a write-off. That's basically all that we get. Yeah,
but it did cost £7 million, as we're told about 8 times in that one chapter.
That's true. That was worth it.
I feel really bad for you guys.
Just talking about Rude Hullet right at the beginning, something I wanted to pick up was, we had a lot of these in the books. However, I think this is the worst example of this yet. One of those, if you told me, it's incredible. If someone had told me, almost 3 decades ago, when the very sight of a professional footballer in a sponsored car left me daydreaming of following in his footsteps, that I would become the centre of controversy when Ruud Gullit, one of Holland's greatest ever players, felt so little of me that he didn't even give me a squad number for the start of the 1999-2000 season, then quite frankly, I wouldn't have believed it. Because it's the most specific thing anyone's ever said. That'd be an insane thing for someone to say to you.
It's such a weird hypothetical. It's
so many clauses in it. It just goes on forever.
So, while we're on the subject of like sponsored cars, can I just refer to one of my favourite parts of this book, where he's talking about former Crystal Palace striker Mike Flanagan. And he says, we would spot Mike wherever he was in his black sports car, and we knew it was his because it had Mike Flanagan Crystal Palace FC written along the side. It is a bit of a giveaway, to be fair, Rob, that that's Mike Flanagan's car.
Johnny, but those are the things. Well, I mean, those are things you did love and didn't love in the book. Is there one particular topic that you want us to hone in on today that particularly tickled your pickle?
So Rob Lee is terrible at forecasting young players' futures, is what I established in this book. So every player that's established. So you've got your Alan Shearers, Gary Speeds, Gazzers, whoever he talks about in the book. Obviously, we know that they had really good careers. Anybody that's not a Newcastle fan and comes across a name of a player that played for Newcastle that they don't recognise, those players had absolutely terrible careers. So he talks a bit about Paul Robinson, who played in place of Alan Shearer in the Sunderland match that that Newcastle lost and got Ruud Gullit the sack.
I didn't realise there was a third Paul Robinson. I knew that there were. I know obviously the Spurs goalie
and the third Paul Robinson,
and the centre back who played for like Millwall and stuff. In but I never heard of this one.
Four Paul Robinsons, if we're counting the owner of Lassiter's and Neighbours.
That's true. Very good point.
Wouldn't want to see him avoided.
No, of course.
Paul Robinson. So he played 11 times for Newcastle. All in all, despite Rob Lee tipping him for a good future, rubbish. Then Carl young Carl Serrant, just 24 years old, not that young in football terms. He's already had eight operations. He played less than 10 times for Newcastle, despite Rob Lee tipping him for a bright future. There's also George Georgiadis, who's actually called Georgios Georgiadis. Rob Lee anglicises his name as well. He played less than 10 times for Newcastle. God. But he seems to have this really weird obsession with Diego Gavilan, who used to play for Newcastle.
Yes.
He brings him up for no particular reason at one point, just to say, we've signed him, and he doesn't speak any English. So Nobby Solano, who is from, he's not from Paraguay, he's from Peru. And I appreciate they speak the same language, but they're not the same country, Robert. But he just brings him up for no real reason. And then right at the end of the book, he goes on this lovely little speech about Diego Gavilan, which I'll just try and find for you.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, by the way, Johnny, because it's a real pet peeve of mine. We've had this in a lot of books. They've kind of tipped someone as a star for the future, and I'll get to some of them in a bit. But yeah, they've been I'm glad someone's taken them to task on these. The soothsaying.
So what Rob says is Bobby Robson, for the uninitiated. Bobby has also invested money in the future of the club by signing young players with bags of potential, such as Paraguayan international Diego Gavilan. Bobby has watched him numerous times and kept tracking the player, even when it looked unlikely he would be able to find the cash to secure his signature. I haven't seen too much of him, so it's difficult to judge him, but I trust the manager's judgment. Diego's over here with his mum and dad, which is good for him. I don't think you're going to see the best of him for at least a year or so. He made 7 appearances for Newcastle and then got sold. So,
I like how he said he's over with his mum and dad. Like he's sort of in the audience of Saturday Night Takeaway.
And of course, Nobby Solano, who acts as an interpreter for the entire family. So,
yeah, of course.
But just the kiss of death continues because he... There's a bit where he talks about John Dahl Thomason, who was at Newcastle in the late 90s. And he basically says, John Dahl Thomason, in not so many words, I'm going to paraphrase Rob here because I can't be bothered to find the section, was a bit of a flop at Newcastle. He's a bit lightweight. He's gone back to Netherlands now. And I wish him all the best for his career. He went on to become Denmark's record goal scorer and won the Champions League while at AC Milan. So... Rob Lee, he does say that he wants a future in coaching, which we know he never had. So I think it's
I don't think he'd make a good scout, would he? Wouldn't make a good scout, for sure. Very, very poor scout.
That doesn't stop him just dedicating an entire chapter to who would be in his favourite 11, just like two-thirds of the way through the book, which nobody asked for.
Which includes, I thought it was quite brave putting in Kieran Dyer, who he's played about twice with at this point in the book, and because he's going to go on to be a Newcastle great, and poor Kieran Dyer is very unlucky. With injuries,
sorry, are you talking about old Pinhead?
Pinhead, apologies. Pinhead. That's what he calls him.
And why is he called Pinhead?
Because he just has a small head.
That's what he says. He says, we called him Pinhead because he had a very small head. You're like, oh, cool, thanks.
Well, he doesn't explain why John Barnes is called Digger. He just goes, you know, like the TV program. No, I don't know. What TV program?
Well, Pinheads traditionally have very small heads, you see.
I went on Gavilan's Wikipedia page, actually, and it says he never really played anywhere. It wasn't just Newcastle. He played a handful of games for about 10 teams, most being 57 for the Brazilian team Internacional. But it also says on Wikipedia he went to Udinese, where he didn't feature once, but apparently scored 15 goals. Wikipedia, so.
Look at the edit history for that, and it's edited by Mr. Arlie 37.
I knew he was good. He was good. But yeah, I mentioned that people predict things. I remember that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, do you remember this? Who read Hasselbank's book? Jack read it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you remember Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank predicted Tony McMahon would go on to be the best player in the world or something?
For Middlesbrough, yeah. He was like, the one player I want to talk about is Tony McMahon. We've got Stuart Downing.
Let's go, Tony. And Neil Ruddock said a line which I didn't bring up in the episode because I was worried about mentioning it. But Neil Ruddock said, Michael Carrick is exciting the pants off the youth coaches. I really hope he's not. Well, very unfortunate. Very unfortunate phrasing. But yeah, shout out to Diego Gavilan. Jack, what got in your. What to say?
What did you enjoy in the book, pants off you.
You're excited. Very good. Very
well,
good.
Well, certain Michael Carrick. No. I think this book is very dull and boring, obviously. As we've said.
But Johnny. Sorry. Around Johnny.
And your hero's book is boring. Sorry, I meant that's what I meant to say. But you know, there are some interesting bits that could have been good in there if they'd been told right. You know, like his time at Charlton, like the team nearly gets like swallowed up into the ground, it seems like. They nearly get relegated several times. There are several exciting like relegation matches, but they're just sort of blown through very quickly, and it feels like Rob's quite bad at finding the thing that's interesting about any anecdote. And I think that's sort of most true when you look at Kevin Keegan, because he keeps talking about how great Kevin Keegan is, and he's got so many anecdotes about Kevin Keegan. Like, Kevin Keegan was this guy who's just so charismatic. He convinced me to sign for Newcastle there and then. So you're like, okay, this will be pretty good. I wonder what stories we've got. And the stories you've got, I would say, are one time when I first met Kevin Keegan, and I was there with my wife, she wore a red dress, and Kevin Keegan was like, oh, Sunderland. And my wife was like, no.
Yep.
And that's it. That is like the starting anecdote. And later on,
you know, it's getting good when that's the first one. That's warming us up.
We're straight in now. There's another one where he went to go see like various houses with Kevin Keegan, as if Kevin Keegan is an estate agent, like sitting in the front seat, like eating wine gums and going, that's a nice house.
Not wine gums, midget gems.
He emphasizes they're like wine gum.
Oh, does he say that? He explains what a midget gem is.
Yeah, kind of like wine gums, but a bit smaller.
Yeah. You know, a pin. Imagine a pin.
We call them pin gums in the changing room.
We call them Kieran Dyer gums. But it just, I think Kevin Keegan is such a charismatic man. You know, he's the guy who signed the Honey Monster for Newcastle.
That's like, true.
He is the guy, and his stories are basically like, I think there's another one at the start that was Rob Lee says, I'm not sure I want to come to Newcastle, and Kevin Keegan just says, just come up and speak to me and see the ground, and that's it. It's just sort of,
all right.
That's enough for Rob Lee. He's like, yeah, okay.
He's that charismatic. Sign anyways. Also, talking about Kevin Keegan, every book when they mention Kevin Keegan, they talk about how good he is at head tennis. he's the king of head tennis. Darren Huckabee said some line, something like, in our first ever book, it was something like, you could tell by the way he played head tennis that he was former European Footballer of the Year, 1978 or something like that. I'm really specific. But Johnny, did you know this?
He played head tennis with Tony Blair, which is a very famous incident. Ooh. in the run up to the 97 general election, I think.
And I didn't know that.
If you watch the footage, it's all so they do it for quite a while, and Tony Blair actually looks quite accomplished at it. But when you really drill down into it, it's Kevin Keegan doing all the legwork, and it's just basically bouncing off Blair's head, and then Kevin Keegan has to like basically adjust his body completely to get it back to exactly where Tony Blair is, and then it just pops back off Tony Blair's head like a 50p any direction, and then Kevin Keegan really works it. So yeah, I didn't know that there was like him and Terry McDermott were like doubles champions, which is mentioned in until they come up against Robert Lee and John Beresford.
Of course, but, you can't beat those two. You're never going to beat those.
Bez.
Genuinely, that came a few times where it would say Bez, and I'd be like, from the Happy Man.
it was confusing.
Really excited.
So this Tony Blair one. Let's go back to that. Kevin Keegan, was it Kevin Keegan versus Tony Blair, or were they on the same team against, I don't know, Rob Lee and John Beresford?
Rob Lee and Alistair Campbell.
That makes more sense, yeah.
They were, I think it was just like a photo op when he was up
James,
in the
there's
North
no way it's going to be a competitive game. like Tony Blair's going to throw down and be like...
Like when Cameron went on Match the Day 2 or something to prove he was normal.
That was Tony Blair as well. He picked Aaron Dizu as one of his favourite footballers, who is, of course, a policeman, which makes a lot of sense.
There's so many facts in a row there. Tony Blair went on Match the Day and picked Aaron Dizu as his favourite player, and now Aaron Dizu is now a... Policeman.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
I thought this was common knowledge.
I like to think we know a few things, but apparently not, no.
These are the sort of anecdotes that Rob Lee should have really put in his book.
That's true.
Instead of the time that that John Beresford said, let's go, we're going to go out into town before training, it'll be fine. And Rob Lee said, okay. And then they did. And then Rob Lee said, oh no, we got to get back home before the big meeting starts. And then they did. End of anecdote.
That was the best story of the book, actually. I've actually got this week's dramatic reading talking of these, Jack. It involves Kevin Keegan, doesn't involve Rob Lee, as most of the best anecdotes in the book seems to be that way. Johnny, as our guest, could you say the words cue dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Ooh.
Oh,
that was good. That was good. Very, very, very good. Here we go. This story is called Steve Howie, Interior Designer. So, as you might guess, it's about Steve Howie. He's a great bloke, Steve, but I'm sure he'll be the first to admit that he's not the brightest. The best example is when he made a total prat of himself in front of the manager when KK, that's Kevin Keegan, I assume, not Kim Kardashian, was in charge. Because Kevin was such a great manager, he wasn't only there for the players if there was a footballing problem. He was everything from an agony aunt to an information service.
That seems like what he's like EQA. Kevin Keegan. Why is the sky blue? And Kevin Keegan's like, oh, for God's sake, okay.
It is, yeah. And in fact, it makes me think he's like when you go to like a train station, you get lost or you want to ask a question like that. It's just got a big I above his name there. One day, Steve went to see him about something. I'm sorry to bother you, Gaffer, but I've got a bit of a problem in my house. These people have come round to fit a carpet, but they've put the wrong colour down. I was wondering if you could have a word with them. Big drama. Okay, Kevin said, give me the details and I'll give them a call. Actually, says, give me the details and I'll give them a call. But don't worry, that's fine.
I'll shake them a call.
About half an hour later, he's back in touch with Steve. I've called them now, Steve, but I'm a bit confused. What carpet did you order? Wedgwood, said Steve. So what have they put down then? Blue. That's right, said Kevin. You ordered Wedgwood blue. No, insisted Steve. Wedgwood. Wood's brown, isn't it? I wanted a brown carpet.
God.
Steve. You ordered Wedgwood blue, and that's what you've got. I'm not sure I can help you on this one. Don't, Kevin. Anyway, in the end, Kevin ran the carpet company again, and I think you managed to persuade them to fit a brown carpet at half price. I think the moral there is, if you ever come across a carpet company called Howie and Son, steer well clear.
Another hypothetical that would never happen.
Yeah.
Very, he's specifically proven that Steve Howie would be terrible at that.
That's why it says on Steve Howie's car, much like Mike Flanagan. Steve Howie, interior decorator and defender. Yeah, that's about. That was the most dramatic reading I could find in the book.
Who wants? I have so many questions.
Yeah,
who wants a brown carpet?
Mm-hmm.
Dull. That's my big first question.
I have a brown carpet in my childhood bedroom.
Really? Bedroom. Okay.
Hmm.
Oh. He really got a blue carpet, blue. But
yeah. Yeah, he shouldn't have hired Steve Howie's company to put him in, James.
But also, why? What would the carpet company think if it was like they get a phone call and it's like, "Hi, it's Kevin Keegan here, Newcastle manager. Can I just check what's a Wedgwood blue?"
Yeah, I don't think it's quite as bad as Maya Yoshida and the curtain incident which we had with him. But yeah, it's up there for dull anecdotes. I think
it's also that it's someone else's dull anecdote. Yeah, this happens a lot. There's another bit in this book where he's like, you got to remember, all players have off days. One time, Johan Cruyff told his friend, "Don't pass the ball to me. I'm not very good today."
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah, yeah.
You provided nothing there.
Yeah. Oh, poor Rob. I feel like we're being mean about him, but look, let's go on a little break. See how we feel after the break. We'll have a few minutes off to calm down on this, and then when we're back, we'll have more Rob Lee action, including some Kenny Dalglish, and we talk about Rob Lee's thighs.
Hi, we're Football Book Club Podcast, and we need your support. Now, let's drop the appeal music. Hi, everyone. James here, and I just want to tell you about the brand new Football Book Club Club, which you can join to receive bonus weekly episodes, access to exclusive member events, and your very own Football Book Club bookmark, all for the same price as a used copy of Darren Huckabee's 2007 book, Hucks. So if you enjoy the podcast and need to hear more afterwards, head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, I'm Grongy Maguire, and this is Chantel for Dooch and Pate.
Hello.
We bonded over our love of reminiscing about weird celebrity couples. The ones no one would believe happened if Google wasn't there to back it up.
We want you to join us as we remember when love was young, times were simpler, and we really thought that Angelina and Billy Bob Thornton were going to make it.
Every week, we're joined by a celebrity guest to discuss the showbiz romance they never got over.
I'm loving the premise of this podcast. I think this is what we all need to be talking about at the moment.
Nobody can beat the Beckhams in terms of unions. No one in the world. Everything about the Beckhams is insane.
This is the most fun we've ever had. Just, I feel like I'm literally 12 again. My mum calling me in for dinner and I'm being like, no.
So take our hand and stroll down memory lane with us as we remember
the way they were.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Rob Lee's Come In number 37 with Johnny Sharples. Still enjoying it? Still enjoying it, Johnny? Still a big fan of Rob Lee? We were going to keep gauging that as we went through.
I'm probably more of a fan of him than Rude Hullet is, but that's the...
Okay. I noticed that also during the break, Johnny was alarmed because he saw that Jack and James have got slightly different copies of the book to he and I. What are your copies, Jack and James?
I think we've got the first edition and the front cover. Can I say, the bad book, the front cover we've got, he's looking sultry and he's like rain pouring down. And yeah. And the title is Come In 37, number 37. It sounds mysterious, like he could be like in The Prisoner.
That's what I was thinking.
It's a very like interesting vibe. And then you open it. But, you know, before that point, it's very good. I think it might be the most impressive book.
Best cover.
Best cover, yeah.
Wow. I was going to say, Johnny, I think the only way to describe his face on R1 is gawky. It's kind of a gawky face he's pulling in R1.
That's the thing, in the picture section, in some of the pictures he looks really handsome and sultry, and some of them he looks like a cartoon character. It's weird.
He is quite a handsome guy. He's a bit of a silver fox, isn't he, Rob Lee, nowadays?
He's a man that I can't imagine ever being a child.
That's very true.
So to me, he's had the same face from like 1993 onwards. Obviously, he's just gone silver, like you said, but I can't imagine that face on a like toddler.
Has he got pictures of him as a toddler? Even as a kid, yeah, I know what you mean. There we go.
He sort of looks like...
Even as a baby right there in that picture. He's still, yeah. You can still see it's very much Rob Lee. I mean, I guess that's how faces work. I guess that's how faces work. And does anyone have an out of context Rob Lee?
Yes.
Right. Jack, prove me right.
Okay, so James Bowden and I think we've got the same one.
I'd be surprised if at least two of us don't have the same one.
I struggled to find any in this one. But Johnny, would you like to kick off?
Some days he would arrive at the valley with shotguns under his arms and help the club out by shooting down pigeons from under the roof of the stand.
Yes.
That was
I'm very sad we can't go into more context about that. But yeah, that is an insane segment.
Fantastic.
From his chart on days. That's all the context I'll give. James, Jack, who wants to go first out of you?
Go on, Jack.
One example of this was when he told his members of staff that pubic hair was unhygienic. One coach, who will remain nameless, immediately went and cut off all his pubic hair.
That's a good point.
It's not the same one.
Is it not?
No.
Okay.
There was one really early on, which to me was just super obvious as a out of context.
Let's hear it.
Sorry, that's my cat's food bowl opening. Out of context, cat.
Out of context, cat. Oh, boy. James, okay, see if you can follow the cat. It's going to be difficult.
Chrissy Waddle was a former sausage maker.
That is great. Yes. Yeah, that
apparently
is
so.
Fascinating.
Well, there we go. My one wasn't great. Our Greek international, George Georgiadis, found out one day when he put his hand in a freshly dumped crap while doing sit-ups.
Yeah.
That's all I could find in there. All I could find. Anyway, that was out of context, probably.
The pubic hair.
That is very funny. Hair.
That was on my list of out of context. Other options.
Oh, give us some other options.
Any other highlights?
I sort of want to offer more context to this one. But I can't. Pistone got a sheep's heart from the butchers, and our German international Didi Hamann got a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf.
I'm very glad we're not giving more context to that. Because
I love
that
one so much.
Yeah, that
well,
was.
Well, we are when we get to what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's okay if Johnny doesn't give context, but you can give context, James. That's allowed. We've given context before.
Yeah,
we have. We can do it. There's no real rules.
There was
show.
Another one that came close, I thought, which I had, which was...
No, there's loads of them. I couldn't find one, and you've found tens of them.
This one's just ridiculous. I think all footballers have got an obsession with water.
What?
That was one of mine as well.
What's he
I love
talking
that one.
About?
He's thinking about ducks again.
Thinking about ducks, yeah.
Ducks. Yeah. Ducks have an obsession with water.
Do you know footballers don't drink water, they'll die.
A lot like houseplants in that respect.
Yeah,
it's true. The amount of times I've left like to go on holiday and come back and all my footballers are dead. I feel so upset.
Oh, you forgot to water our Yantazeyu. Thanks a lot. I've got a quick topic I was going to bring up with you, Johnny. Going back to the very start, we didn't really talk much about Charlton, where he was voted third in a vote for Charlton's greatest ever player. So, you know, he must have had a pretty good career there. It was a little bit before my time, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Why I said like that. Johnny, I've got two questions to ask you, which come up a lot for the first time in this segment. And yeah, there are two things that Rob Lee seems to suggest should be common Rob Lee knowledge. And you've already named four things that you knew about him. I wanted to see if you knew these two things. Number one, did you know that Rob has very famous thighs?
No.
Okay. Cool.
In the pantheon of famous football thighs, I think Roberto Carlos is the most famous, mm-hmm. but Rob Lee, no. Maybe he's got himself confused, Rob and Roberto.
Roberto Carlos, yeah. That could be it. But he even mentioned that in the picture section as well. There's a picture of him as a baby, and it says, working on those famous thighs or something like
so
that.
So weird. It's
really strange.
Back when I was a baby, I was basically all thigh.
I never skip leg day, even as a baby.
God, no, you're right. It's, age 6 months with those footballers' thighs developing nicely.
Yeah, and he mentions them in the Charlton section as well. I can't remember. Obviously, someone, while he's writing the book, has told him he's got very nice thighs. And he's like, well, that's
my personality.
That's my
great.
And the second thing I want to ask you, Johnny, you mentioned it before, but did you know beforehand that people think Rob Lee is a turnstile or was a turnstile operator?
No, and when I read that, I've done what you immediately did as well, and Googled any instances of Rob Lee turnstile, because he says, oh, it's one of the things people always say about me. It's one of the things people always write about me. So I Googled it, and there was about two hits, and most of them were about his granddad being a turnstile operator, not Rob Lee being a turnstile operator.
That's exactly, I didn't know. So basically he goes, as a 15-year-old, Dad took me along to the Valley with my friend Peter Coyne and got us jobs working on the turnstiles. This job gave rise to one of those stories which is so often brought up about me, namely that I'm a former turnstile operator, done good. Done good.
Of course, because like a lot prison. Of those, a lot of those turnstile operators, usually they go into
they turn to harder things after.
It's a slippery slope.
It's a really slippery slope. Everyone seems to think I did the job for years, when in fact it was only on three occasions, but it still stuck with me. And then he says something like, in the match programs, all you see is former turnstile operator Rob Lee, which could not really be further from the truth. Well, it's not even true. It could be, because he did do it three times. So he literally was a former turnstile operator. He then goes on to say the three times he did it. So he was a former turnstile operator. It wasn't...
There is truth
there.
Many
things that are further
than
truth.
There's definitely truth. Yeah. It's
if
it's truth.
Said the former child arsonist, then he'd be like, that couldn't be further from the truth. But you were a turnstile operator at least three times, Rob.
Or and like, you did start several fires.
Yeah. I only started the three fires, so I wasn't... It couldn't be further from the truth that I was a child arsonist. Yeah. Well, there we go. So that's cleared that up.
I think I'm obsessed with this because I think the book really, like the publishers really wanted to push that because it's in the front cover or like the front, you know, the bit in the book where it says like...
Table of contents.
No, not the table of contents.
Oh, like the blurb at the beginning.
Inside sleeve.
Okay, yeah. It says,
for a man who used to operate the turnstiles at Charlton, Lee has come a long way from his roots in the East End of London. And I think they must have been like, it'll be great. It'll be the story of a former turnstile operator who became a footballer. And Rob Lee was like, no, we're not doing that because I don't agree with it. So they kept the chapter in, but instead of calling it like something else, they've called it turnstile operator with a question mark.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's some mystery there, isn't there? Was he a turnstile operator? Wasn't he a turnstile operator?
This is a case for Iron Dizu.
Iron Dizu staring at that chalkboard again with,
Probably was it. Sounds like a Primus song. What's that Primus song? Jerry was a race car driver.
Probably was a turnstile operator. Like a
I was thinking of Sade Smooth Operator. That's what I was coming into my head every time, but never mind.
Well, I just thinking of the band Turnstile.
Oh, yeah.
We're all thinking of music.
I'm not.
Okay.
Although there was one bit where he said, I tried a cigarette, but I didn't like it. And I was like, that's a good Katy Perry song.
Nice.
That's weird, that bit, because he's talking about being a kid and how he did... He's like, oh, I tried a cigarette, I didn't like it. I tried something else, was it?
You drank a bit.
Oh, and I drank like a beer then. And I didn't like it. But I've grown to like it since. It's like, yeah, that's just how life works. You're now an adult. Like, you're not going to like it when you're a kid.
I didn't like blue cheese to start with, but now I like blue cheese. Other things I like include seafood food.
He also tried being a Liverpool supporter and then decided he was a West Ham supporter very suddenly in this book as well.
Yes. So. Well, there's some bit where he says like, just because it was my dad's team, I didn't really care for them that much. And then when he's leaving Charleston, I think he's linked with West Ham and he goes, well, obviously I was attracted to it because they were my boyhood club. It's like, no, they weren't. You just said they weren't your boyhood club. You didn't care for them. Yeah, it's all over
the shop. That happens a lot in this book. There's a lot of bits where you're like, you just said that five... But there's a bit at the start where they're like, we don't train that hard. Training, we like to play in matches. We don't train that hard. It's fine. And then later on, they're like, players would come and they would come to training and be like, you guys have never trained harder. This is the most terrifying place for trainers. And it's like, which one is it, Rob?
Yeah. And did you know that Stuart Pearce likes the Sex Pistols?
Yeah. Did you know that Alan Sugar, and I'm not Alan Sugar.
Alan Sugar.
Alan Sugar could have had his pick of any club in the world, but he chose Newcastle United.
There we go.
So I'm going to give a bit of context to the previously mentioned out of context, which is it was during the Kenny Dalglish era. Kenny came in and took over from Kevin Keegan, and he made some changes. And he decided that the training pitches should be a bit more private. So by all accounts, they just trained on like a park field. And it was like covered in rubbish and dog shit.
Yep.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Kenny year was a strange one. It didn't last too long. But basically, they sold Les Ferdinand. So you'll remember that well, do you, James? Do you remember that well?
I remember going to Spurs when we signed him and Janilla about maybe the same, maybe exactly the same time. Same summer for sure, yeah.
And then they lost Shearer as well to injury for like most of the season. Yeah, so they were stuck with, was it Asprilla and John Dahl Thomason? And Asprilla couldn't speak English and he had an interpreter, which was quite funny. He said that his interpreter would go on nights out with him, and when he was trying to chat up girls, the interpreter would be doing it for him. Like, so fucking weird. I'm assuming that when Asprilla was successful, he like that's where it ended. He didn't like go back with them.
Interpreting dirty talk.
Yeah.
So weird.
It's like that Friends episode where
She goes on a date with
Phoebe goes on a date with someone.
Oh, that's
and the interpreter
it,
has come along, and then Monica starts flirting with the interpreter. I'm so sorry.
Okay, yeah. Get back to Kenny Dalglish and the shit on the pitches, James.
And he's not talking about John Dahl Thomason.
Was that part of the Kenny era? I think it was. They had a Christmas night out and did a Secret Santa at one point. Is that the same era? Or is it not?
Maybe. It might have been Rude Hullet. Because when did they sign Duncan Ferguson?
I once met Duncan Ferguson and absolutely panicked. And I wanted to tell him that he scored a great goal for Newcastle against Manchester United. And I accidentally just said, oh, I really liked your goals.
What did he say to that?
Just looked at me and sort of nodded.
That must be terrifying. That must be absolutely terrifying.
Sorry, give me 2 seconds. Someone's just knocking on my door. I'm just going to go and answer it.
It's very erratic.
Not like 3 times. Sorry, bear with me 2 seconds.
I'm the zoo. There's been a murder.
James, all sorted? Your door?
Yeah. Some man knocking on my door constantly. Okay, so there was a point where they did a Secret Santa over Christmas. I think they were at a restaurant somewhere, and we alluded to it in the out of context earlier. Where someone bought Stuart Pearce's Zimmer frame, haha, original. You know, just boring footballer. They bought Mein Kampf for Didi Hamann, the German, brilliant. Like, just stupid.
Gloss over that one.
And he said that Duncan Ferguson was trying to find a llama for Nobby Solano, and he was like searching around Newcastle for it for like days to try and find. And he says, I'm glad he didn't find one because that would have been a really weird thing, bringing a llama into a restaurant. I was like, yeah, but a minute ago you just said that there was a sheep's heart given to, who was it?
Diego Gabella.
Yeah.
Was Diego Gabella?
Alessandro Pistone.
Pistone.
Yeah, like, that's a normal thing to bring into a restaurant. Like, Jesus Christ.
Could eat that. I think that would have spiced the book up if a llama just turned up halfway through the book. That would have made the book miles more interesting.
I like imagining Duncan Ferguson just wandering around the streets of Newcastle trying to find a llama.
Yeah.
I also feel like if Duncan Ferguson says he wants a llama, you get Duncan Ferguson a llama.
I know
he's trying to find a llama.
He hasn't smiled since that was that dream was gone.
There's definitely llamas in Tyneside. 100%, there must be a llama farm. Doug Ferguson, I have no proof of this, but I'm sure there must be. They're all over the shop nowadays.
That's only thanks to someone like Nobby Solano.
Teeside. I've seen him in Teeside, and that's not too far away.
What I do like about that anecdote as well is he doesn't offer any context to why Alessandro Pistone got a
no,
sheep
that's
heart.
And he doesn't say who gave him it.
I can reveal if you want why he got the heart.
Oh, an exclusive. Football Book Club exclusive.
So the rumour is that they gave him a sheep's heart because he didn't have any heart of his own.
Oh, God.
He was quite a gutless performer.
Wow.
That's cruel.
A mean thing
that's
to get.
That's horrible. So passive.
Is it as cruel as giving a German a copy of Mein Kampf?
Well, at least that's sort of like generic meme.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, you're German. You'll like
it.
This one's like, hi, we've looked into your soul and we've decided you don't have one. We, footballers, have decided you don't have one. I really like the way that the start of this anecdote, he said, someone came up with this revolutionary idea. Instead of going out for fancy dress, we would all buy gifts for each other, but we wouldn't know who those gifts were from.
Right. He doesn't want to say Secret Santa, does he?
He just says Secret Santa. He says it like it's a new thing.
See, there you go. Rob Lee invented Secret Santa. So
it's a bit like when Alessandra Burke thought she'd invented the word. Was it Elephant in the Room?
Elephant in the Room, yeah.
Yeah. I'm in awe of these people.
In her book, she's got a chapter called Elephant in the Room? And that kind of brings us to the... Oh, actually, James, one thing I did want to ask you. What did you think of Rob Lee's stag beetle prank? I know you hate football pranks, so I was interested to see what you thought of this one, because I thought it was quite an inventive one.
I remember the pranks bit. I can't remember that.
No, Rob Lee, wakes up one morning...
He finds a stag beetle in his room.
There's like a giant stag beetle on his pillow, which is weird in the first day. And then him and maybe Warren Barton, Wazza, whatever he's called in this, decide to put a toothbrush... Yeah. In his.
Oh, no, it's on England duty. Do it to gather.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they put a toothbrush in the pincers of the beetle, and then put it in Gazza's room, and he just sees it and flips out.
Oh, it looks as though it's brushing my teeth.
That's quite a funny image compared to this. And then Gazza's like, brilliant, right? And he just takes the stag beetle and goes on and does better pranks with it for the rest of the night. Basically, is what happens. They go, right, this is too much for you, Rob, to deal with. I'm going to go take this and have some real fun.
Weird in any of those pranks was, why was John Beresford up at 6:30 a.m. throwing stones at windows? That was the weird of it for me. I was like, why is he getting up so early? Fair enough, he just does that in the evening when they're asleep and he's still had a few drinks and he's up still. It was six. He's like, he set his alarm and he's like, I'm getting up at 6:30 to throw some stones at the windows.
You weren't here, James, for the Neil Ruddock one where Steve Sedgley set a 2 a.m. wake up call. Go outside, scream outside Neil Ruddock's door. Neil Ruddock would open his door and see Steve Sedgley with two wine gums up his nose. Neil Ruddock proceeded to take... Yeah, sorry, Midget Gems, they're a bit like them. As Neil Ruddock would then proceed to take out the wine gums, Steve Sedgley would eat the wine gums and then go back into his bedroom as though nothing happened. So
that's
if you want to know, very strange, very strange. That, I think that
at
was
at least
a
there's a degree of originality to that, though.
Very much. I think the stag beetle brushed his teeth. It's pretty original.
We haven't discussed the biggest prank of all, which was inspired by Noel's house party. Which Alan Shearer, Rob Lee, John Beresford, and a couple of the other lads were round at Rob Lee's house watching Noel's house party. Which is I know the 90s were a different time, but...
He loved Mr. Blobby.
Who didn't? And Sammy the Shammy, played by Neil Morrissey.
There's a deeper cut than I can remember in that show.
Sorry, big fan. A lot of gunge. But yeah, they fooled Alan Shearer into thinking that two women at a nearby table were very annoying, which...
It's the way that Alan Shearer is like, I would never fall for something like this. Absolutely never. And so they're like, all right, we'll do it. And they do this terrible prank, really irritating prank that requires quite a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To just get these people to constantly come up and just be annoying at him.
Yeah.
Oh. And then at the end,
to the point where he almost throws something at them. He almost throws a drink at them, but there's nothing in there. I was like, oh, this could have really kicked off. It could have got really nasty. Nasty, this prank.
It felt like a much worse version of Rio's World Cup wind-ups.
Well, that's already setting a pretty low bar.
That's what I'm saying.
Rio's World Cup wind-ups.
Someone was watching that thing and went, you know what? This would be great if it was televised. Well, and
Rob Lee's World Cup wind-ups. God, what a boring show that would be.
There's also one bit where where they pour water over, because everyone soaks, everyone eats.
Yeah,
like everyone just pours water over.
Pouring buckets of water, isn't he?
Shearer pulls buckets of water over people, and then he says they got him back. We charged into his room later that morning as they were playing cards, and I emptied an entire waste paper basket of freezing water over Alan. But that's the bit afterwards that I find really concerning. He just sat there motionless on his bed, still holding a soaking wet hand of cards. For how long?
3 months.
He's still there now.
Yeah.
They had to build the Match of the Day studio around him.
See, bit about Shearer pouring buckets of water over the people when they're doing interviews, all I could imagine was, in Match of the Day when Gary Lineker does those little post-match interviews with the managers.
With the managers and stuff.
Shearer just running up like on Match of the Day, just soaking him. Like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. We're on TV.
You think he's dull, but he's not. He's not a dull guy. He's a fun guy. He's a fun guy.
He just got murked.
Just got murked by Robert Lee.
And then we come to the end of the book. There's a nice chapter in R1 Johnny actually at the end. He dedicates it to a supporter called James Ibister, I think his name. Ibister?
Yes.
His name is. Yeah. Which is...
I thought that bit was really nice. And
it was
just wholesome. And it was really nice that he took the time to talk us through this young man's... He was very ill. He died at the age of 21 after having a very rare condition. But it was just, you know, a really nice story and how he looked after the young man's, I think they were his adoptive parents, is that right?
Yeah, they were, yeah.
There was a bit where he talked about, which made me laugh, where he said he liked Alice Cooper and Bon Jovi. And I'm surprised he didn't say, similar to what Stuart Pearce liked, he likes Sex Pistols.
What he does say, I think, is worse. He goes, he's like Bon Jovi, Sinead O'Connor, and Alice Cooper. None were to my taste, but who cares? That's why he slags off his music tastes.
Not here to defend himself. But there were a few moments like that, not just in this chapter, but where he talked about, and this is just with the benefit of hindsight, he talked about Gary Speed quite touchingly. Mm. Obviously, it wasn't quite as touchingly at the time. He was just describing Gary Speed as a footballer, as a person. But in hindsight, it was just very nice to read that Gary Speed was a well-loved player when he was still alive. Similar with Bobby Robson as well. He talks in glowing terms about Bobby Robson as well. And again, very nice to... And Gazza as well. He talks really nicely about Gazza, who's obviously had his troubles. But yeah, there were moments of touchiness. I don't think they were specifically written to be that touching. It's just... Rob Lee's inability to flower his language, which made them all the more feel like they were a tribute to these people. But yeah, they were just nice bits to read, and they didn't have that many exclamation marks in them, which was a break.
Yeah. Actually, when I searched Diego Gavilan earlier, one of the few things I found was him saying how much he loved Gary Speed as well. So there we go. He said he was like a father to him. I looked up the age difference. It was 11 years. But which isn't that much, but still very, very nice. Very, very sweet. I feel like this is the wrong time now to criticise the book. I feel like we've reached the point in the show where we now go, your thoughts, did it change you, the book, and give it the score. But, you know, we got to be objective here, guys. We've got to, see, we can't just base it all on the last few seconds. What did we think of it? Johnny, did it change your life?
It changed my life in the fact that I now own two copies of Robert Lee's biography.
Yep.
And you're never going to get rid of those.
One thing I've just noticed is in the front cover of this, it says that whoever previously sold it for 70p and I bought it for £3. That's a big markup.
Great markup.
Yes. From whoever I bought it from.
Wow. Yeah, it's a success story. They're flipping Rob Lee books.
Yeah, but it's an awful book. I wish I'd never read it. I wish Rob Lee was still just the man who my parents forced me to have on the back of my football shirt for purely economical reasons. And they'll listen to this because they're very supportive, much like Rob Lee's dad. Rob, if you are listening, please stop hawking that awful energy drink with the man with the bad beard. It's not a reputable company, and you're basically in a pyramid scheme. So that's one for people to Google if they don't know the context of what I've just said.
Out of context, Rob Lee / energy drink. That's great.
Their Wikipedia page says that the legitimacy of the business is in question because it's impossible to find cans of that energy drink anywhere in the world. And Rob Lee hawks on Twitter. So anyway, it's a crap book. And it's a
score out of 10. Drink. Score out of 10.
37.
37 out of 10. Cool. That's gonna make it the best book we've ever done on the show, I think. Can I make that 3.7? 3.7?
Oh,
that
sorry. It was going to be 7, and then Rue Tollett said I couldn't give it 7, so I gave it 37.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Thank you. That was the context of the joke.
James, score out of 10?
2.
And is it? Pretty bad. I'll give it a 4. It was bad, but it's not like a bad... Well, it is bad.
It's not like it's Mein Kampf.
Yeah, how are we rating Mein Kampf out of 10?
I think D.J. Herman would be more upset if he got this for Christmas, actually. I think in some ways. Jack, what are you going to give
it? I'll give it a 3. I'll split the difference.
And Johnny, you're getting a 3.7. I'm going to round that to a 4. So 13, is that right? So 3.25? Yeah, that's pretty bad, actually. That is pretty bad. Sorry, Rob. He does seem like a good guy, though. Like we said at the end, seems like a nice guy. Just maybe not the most exciting footballing life, perhaps. Have a better life, Rob.
He did have a... This is the problem. He did have an interesting footballing life.
Yeah, there's lots of
stuff. That's what Jack said before we came on. Yeah,
Charlton nearly went out of business and basically was saved by him being sold. He went to Newcastle in the best era of Newcastle since the 50s. Mm-hmm. He had a big falling out with one of the most famous footballers of the past 50 years. Mm-hmm. And then he was managed by Dalglish, Keegan, Robson. He went to the World Cup with England. What was he doing? Just throwing buckets of water over people. Live in the moment, Robert.
There's actually a bit that I think really sums it up, that whole thing where Gazza has been it's, you know, one of those famous moments in English football where Gazza discovers he's not going to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And all the England players are being given appointments to come in. And everything's been delayed, and they're like, Gazza smashed up the whole room. And Lee's reaction is, needless to say, the time appointments were well out of the window at this point. That's not the thing to focus on, Rob.
Yeah. Oh, Rob. Yeah, he needs the better editor to come in and get the real stories out. Anyway, quiz this week. You're named after the various nicknames Rob has given his teammates. So, Jack, you're Pinhead.
Cool.
AKA Kieran Dyer, of course. Johnny, you're Bats. Can you remember who that was? Whose nickname that was?
David Batty. Yeah.
David Batty is correct. And James, you're our big balding Geordie, which is what Rob calls Alan Shearer. Terrible nickname. Question number one. Oh, so shout your name out if you know the answer. Your new name that I've given you. Question number one. Which mythical creature was Rob's Sunday league team named after?
Pinhead.
Bats.
Bod. Big balding Geordie.
I was going to give you an option. A, Hermes. B, Pegasus. C, Medusa. Athletic. Which is it? Which is it? What were you, Jack?
Pinhead.
Which were you, Pinhead? Which answer are you going for, Pinhead? I've confused already. Too many words.
Pegasus.
Pegasus is correct. 1 point for Jack.
I got to get in quick. Kevin Day was on this and he destroyed me. And it's actually affected my personality.
Sorry, Johnny. This is like when a team gets thrashed and they've got to make the most up for it the next game. They're really cracked up for the next one. Jack's really desperate to prove a point today. Number two, name any of Rob's four reasons why he loves the Northeast. There's 4 points up for you here. Yep.
The parking's better than it is in London.
Very true. That was the parking's no problem. Yep. Anything else?
I can't remember. That was the one that really struck
Bats.
Me.
Yep.
It's good restaurants, is that one?
Yep, full of restaurants and clubs, I'll give you that.
Pinhead?
Yep.
People are friendly?
Nope.
Big Bowling Geordie.
Cat's eating again, I can hear. Big Bowling Geordie.
You feel safe there.
That's true, that's another one. Feel safe, and the other one is plenty to do. Plenty to do is the other one.
London, notoriously.
nothing going on. Number three, what was the food-based name players gave to the news that Keegan was about
Bats.
To drop you? Yep.
Custard pie.
Custard pie is correct.
I shouldn't have said I was up for it. I'm not up for it anymore.
You got cocky. Yeah, you collapsed. Number four, back to Christmas parties. Which comedian did Rob Lee dress up as for the Christmas do 1996?
A Pinhead.
Yep.
Roy Chubby Brown.
Is correct.
Oh, God.
Is correct. Wow, this is a real fight. It's the finish. So it's 3-2-1 at the moment with one loss, 1 point to play for.
Oh, God, here we go.
Question number five.
Colin got closing in moment, this.
Yeah. Wait, question number five. Who is the most talented player Rob has played with?
Bats.
Oh, yep.
No, it's Diego Cavallan.
You're out for the round.
Oh,
If you know it, you can answer. You're all back. Who does Rob describe as the most talented player he's ever played with in his first 11? He picks. I'll give you a clue.
Oh, Bats.
Yep.
David Ginola.
David Ginola is correct. Johnny.
Controversial, to say the least, Rob caveats it with.
Yep. And then he lists about 50 other players who he says, it could have also been him. Yeah, it could have been them. Yeah. Could have been anyone.
I was bored, yeah.
It is time. Johnny, you've won the most coveted prize of all, Ken Zong. So congratulations, Johnny. Ken is our friend who writes a football chant for a player who's long since retired. What's he had recently, Jack? Can you remember?
I have no memory. I'm sorry. Brain's gone.
What's he had? He had Steve Grizovic. This is coming up to Eurovision, isn't it? That was one that he had. This week, to the tune of Papa Roach's Last Resort. It's just going to take some energy on my behalf. Here we go. Cuts your attack to pieces. He's Callum Davenport, big and brazen, ball stealing, don't try to pass or he's intervening. There we go. I think it's the best one yet.
That's so
good. Can I just make a point that Callum Davenport was stabbed in the leg?
I know. I was going to tell him this. I said, can we change it to something about set pieces as opposed to cuts your attack to pieces? You're right. He was. That's how I ended his career. Yeah. I think it's okay.
I think, you know, the song is too definitive.
Yeah.
You have to start with that.
I should have told Ken that. That is a good point. He did get stabbed in the leg with a butter knife. Horrible. Anyway, that's all for this week's episode. Be back in a fortnight. If you can't wait 2 weeks, make sure you join the Football Book Club, where you receive 20 minutes more. Chad doing the plugs. Can't wait to plug the show. You receive 20 minutes more Football Book Club every other Monday, plus a Football Book Club bookmark. Head to patreon.com/football book club. In the meantime, start laughing. In the meantime, make sure you get in touch with us on Twitter @FootyBookClub, Instagram @FootballBookClub, or on Facebook. Send us your thoughts, your author footballer puns, chant ideas, or if you've got a moment in time for us, Johnny, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
It reminds me of being stabbed in the back by that bastard rude hullet.
thank you so much for coming on. Anything you want to plug at all?
Just follow me on Twitter @JohnnyGabriel, and then never reply to any of my tweets because it gets on my nerves.
That is good. And also, I'm guessing 2 copies of Rob Lee's book might be ending up in a charity shop in Bury some point soon, maybe.
Or if you could follow my Depop store, then there might be, I can autograph them.
Nice. There we go. Any last words, anyone?
Sorry, I think I'm just still...
You're stuck on Davenport.
Like a train, sorry, yeah.
Okay,
good. No, go. Someone else should come up with the last word.
Nope, it's all good. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, James Baldwin, and Johnny Sharples. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Rob Lee for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Rob Lee went on to play for Derby, West Ham, Oldham and Wickham before retiring in 2006 and returning to his first love, working the turnstiles at the Valley. Alan Shearer finished his career at Newcastle and now presents on Match of the Day, although, according to Rob, he could have had his pick of any football show in Europe. Rude Hullet was sacked as Newcastle manager after losing the dressing room when he couldn't find a llama for Duncan Ferguson. Diego Gavilan retired in 2010 in his native Paraguay, although Rob Lee still tips him for a big future at Newcastle. And Noel's house party ended in March 2000, leaving an empty hole in the Newcastle team Saturday nights. The theme music heals behind the work of Silent Partner and is using a Creative Commons 4.0 basis. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, see ya!